who've battled the supernatural forces of evil as Jeannie Hopkirk, helped the saint to vanquish villains and danced on the Riviera with Tony Curtis and Roger Moore, being a regular midweek drive correspondent from California is the clear way forward. I'm Annette Andre, and I'd like to congratulate you for choosing this station and podcast.
Delighted to see, Derek, that actually under the 10thplanetevents.co.uk wonderful, superlative website, we've actually got the very same show that we're listening to at present. It's so exciting. You know, sandwiched between Cybermen, 10th Planet Events, and it's like a long-held ambition, really. Much as every month, the delight of actually connecting once again with our ace correspondent from California, and I bet she is missing the delights of Snowzilla so much. Annette, I'm sure you really wish you were still on that East Coast so you could have actually said, let's talk Snowzilla. Or maybe not.
I have to admit, excuse me, I had to admit that during last week, Arthur and I sat during the weather forecasts with stupid grins on our faces, looking out at the sun outside and the gently blowing breeze. Yeah.
And that's the message, really, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean. It's a challenge in its own right, really, but never mind.
It is.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive, Annette, for indeed your first official audio missive of 2016. And indeed,
I know. How did that happen? 2016. I mean, what happened to 2015?
We turn around. It was only a matter of moments before Derek Hamley was making his studio debut, and that was 2015 for that sequence. Just a quick heads up: in the studio, we have once again Derek Hamley from aforementioned 10thplanetevents.co.uk. Great stuff there.
Hello.
We have a fantastic magician, David Fox, who's been doing some magic live on air. Yes, I know, Annette. Magicians on the radio. Exactly. Well, hopefully, when you're back in Britain in the next few months, we'll manage to connect together and sort of we'll make that dream a reality, as we like to say.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
And we have ace first-year student and journalism undergraduate Emily Jones, together with equally ace Sol. But she's from Peterborough as well. That would be Tessa Snart and, of course, the fabulous Emma Tinson. So there we are. Five individuals.
Hello to everyone.
I know. All set and ready to actually hear what you're going to speak to us about on this particular exciting day. Over to you, Annette. What would you like to focus on?
Okay. We're getting very deep today.
We are.
It's called Happy Anniversary, Dr. Einstein. I read recently that physicists, astronomers, and mathematicians are celebrating the 100th anniversary of Albert Einstein's general theory of relativity. Well, these days I'm quick to haul out the party poppers and paper hats for just about any occasion to help blot out the seemingly endless stream of dire events that blanket the news from morning till night. And while I don't pretend to have the foggiest what Dr. Einstein was on about, over the years, I've employed a general theory of relativity of my own that I think he might have appreciated. Well, both of us were immigrants, coming from our mother countries to foreign territories and bringing with us, along with his sweaters and my knickers, childhood memories of a life left behind. It's not easy to shed the likes and dislikes of your early years, when Vegemite was the spread of choice on my breakfast toast, and not the cream cheese with chives that my American husband slathers on his morning bagel. After reading the article on relativity, my understanding of Einstein's theory boils down to something like, that is to this as this is to that. To be sure that I had got it right, I checked with Arthur, the house boffin on things scientific. Close enough, he said from the relative safety of the other room. Granted, finding the relativity of Einstein seated at his desk in Switzerland, imagining the laws that operate the universe, and I hoping to divert your attention to the opening of a new supermarket just down the hill from my home, might seem elusive, but not in my theory. The market soon to be open is called Gelson's. It will replace another market that lasted about 6 months called Hagen's, which took over Albertson's, the market that was here when we moved into our house less than 2 years ago. All this activity on a single patch of land. Three markets in such a short time span, naturally got me thinking about the Cathedral of St. Mary Redcliffe in Bristol, a city I played often to some nice notices. On free time, I'd wander around the historic areas and end my peregrinations at St. Mary's to admire the medieval architecture and reflect on the fact that the cathedral was built on the footprints of two previous temples of worship dating back to Roman times. But unlike the markets, the cathedral and its forebears have a history of some 2,000 years of occupying the same slice of real estate. Now, here's where my relativity comes into play. I think you'd agree that most people would say there's little relevance in a match-up of St. Mary Redcliffe and a gaggle of American supermarkets with a questionable record of staying power. But since I was young, I've had a quirky habit of looking for patterns, similarities, or parallels in people, objects, cultures that are seemingly unconnected. To my mind, the church and the markets are in the feeding business. The church allegedly nurturing the soul, the markets supporting the diet book industry. Years ago, a journalist friend told me that I had string. It's an old newsroom accolade for a story that weaves together disparate bits and pieces, giving it coherence, new meaning, and relativity. Certainly Einstein had string to the extreme. While still in short pants, he was wondering what it would be like to crawl inside an electric wire and ride the wave of current. Some 20-odd years later, at that desk in Switzerland, he imagined himself traveling through space and time on a moonbeam at the speed of light. When asked what effect such a ride would have on him, Einstein shrugged and said, "I'd be invisible traveling all the time, traveling in time, neither in a here or a there." Which brings me to my grandson, Jake, who has definitely inherited my string genes. A few years back, when he was 3, Jake slipped into his parents' bedroom at 3 a.m. and to loud good cheer announced his presence with, "Wakey, wakey, Mommy!" "Jake, do you know what time it is?" "No, Mommy." "Why not? Didn't you look at the clock I gave you last week?" "No, it's in the drawer." "Who put it there?" "I did. Wakey, wakey, Mommy!" Clearly, even at that tender age, Jake had a firm understanding of Einstein's theory that time exists in the eye of the beholder. And in case you imagine that the good doctor didn't practice what he preached about relativity, we have this from one of his students when he was teaching at Princeton University. Einstein was standing on a campus path, looking befuddled, when a group of students approached. "Dr. Einstein, can we help you?" "Well, I don't know. Did any of you see in what direction I was walking before I stopped here?" "Yes, you were coming down the hill." "Ah, then I must have had my lunch." And so, Dr. Einstein, in the hope you've hitched that ride on a moonbeam and are traveling at the speed of light, I wish you a very happy anniversary, wherever you are.
Always like to feel Albert's one of our key listeners, actually, so that goes out to you, Albert. I mean, wonderful stuff. Emma Tinson, any thoughts on travelling moonbeams and, of course, the relativity of time?
That was so interesting. I mean, I like to think about time all the time because I'm such a busy person and I
you need never, to make more time for
I
yourself.
Know, I never get time to myself and I always get to the end of the day and I think, you know, I've spoken to a few people my age who have now got children and they say they don't get any downtime and I feel the same doing my degree and, you know,
I think of your child as your degree.
I want my little rest time at the end of the day, but I don't always seem to get that. So I think, you know, we all do need to think about time and how we spend our time in our life as well, because I'm quite
absolutely
a person for having a lie in, but then I feel like I'm wasting my morning as well. So
Derek, time enough for you?
Fascinating. That was very, very intense, very interesting. Thank you. So, yeah.
I tell you, there are a number of radio shows in the British Isles that have actually had a fantastic actress talking about sweaters, knickers, supermarkets and Albert Einstein's theory of relativity. None.
Scandalous.
None. Exactly.
Scandalous.
Pushing those boundaries. That's what we do. David.
Certainly lots of food for thought there. I think with the internet, mobile phones and things, obviously I remember a time when we didn't have these things. Time has become more compressed nowadays. It's certainly very poignant.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's 7 minutes past.
You're absolutely right, yes.
7.5 minutes past 10 o'clock in California as we speak.
Yeah.
Yes.
Coming up to 7.5 minutes.
That's right.
Past 6 o'clock
and you're there at whatever time.
Collectively. Emily.
Well, I have to say, I definitely have never felt time going so fast until I started studying for a degree, because you get up one morning and start doing your work and then suddenly it's, you know, 11, 12 o'clock at night. So I definitely think everyone needs to find more time in the day for a bit of downtime and rest. And I definitely think that mobile phones and tablets don't help with that.
Oh, you're right. No, they don't. They don't. It really takes up a lot of time.
The sage words of our newly appointed Shropshire correspondent there, again, echoing the importance of time management. And from Peterborough, of course, a place which many people would say is beyond time itself, Tessa?
Well, I find time quite magical, pardon the pun with a magician in the studio, but obviously all the different time zones in the world, you could potentially travel if you're flying.
Well, we do, exactly.
We do go back in time. So it is quite an incredible thing.
I know, yes. Well, I was talking to my aunt yesterday, who lives in Australia, and I was talking to her yesterday evening, and she was sitting over there in the afternoon the next day. So I was talking on Tuesday, and she was talking to me, and it was Wednesday. So it's all a bit of a muddle, you know, I can do it with England, too, if I check at the right time and call someone up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, like Jake did with his parents.
But fundamentally, we have to acknowledge that maybe all time is an illusion. And according to the cosmologists, referring to string theory, or perhaps you should say super string theory, actually everything has already happened instantaneously in any case. So we just actually have these buffers of time to kind of give us some sort of texture and contrast of our lives. I throw that
Absolutely.
Out there.
I have to tell you a little story very quickly. It's one that Arthur tells quite a lot. About a boy he went to school with, and he was a very, I mean, highly intelligent boy. And they went down there one day at the park with the I can't remember what it's called, anyway, he was on a carousel. And they were going around, and Arthur looked around. He could see that Marvin was looking down and sort of rather, serious. So he leaned over and he said to Marvin, "Are you having a good time?" And Marvin looked up and he said, "Oh, yes, very good." And Arthur said, "Well, what are you doing?" And he said that he was calibrating the speeds that the inner horses were going to the outer horses on the carousel.
Very important, that, actually.
So there was little Einstein actually doing that. He could actually do that.
Of course, you realise that he might actually be Einstein reincarnated. I mean, that's the possibility. He might have actually said, there could be all sorts of areas here. Lord
Arthur
knows.
Actually said that. He had a feeling he was, except the timing wasn't quite right.
Has he got spiky white hair that sticks up on a sort of regular basis and sort of coming? No,
I never met him, so I don't know.
We'll get ourselves sorted. Coming up, playing The Matrix, Notes from the Universe. Yes, it's Mike Dooley time again, as far as the Midweek Drive is concerned. We will also make time for Phil Learness to actually share with us his experience of now formally being brought into the Los Angeles Breakfast Club and doing all sorts of things there. So that's still to come. But Emma, would you like to take the time to address those final two questions for the moment to Annette André, who will wrap up the neat January time Annette André audio missive? Go, Emma.
Yes, Annette, have you enjoyed your time on the show today?
My time was very well spent, I have to say. And I
Lovely.
Hope
and
that
will
we'll
you
be
join
conversing
us again on the show anytime
again.
Soon.
And you're speaking simultaneously at the same time, saying it will return. Yes, so that's all great. Quick, cue the White House.
White House? Oh, sir, I'm terribly sorry. I can't put you through to President Carter.
Einstein, go.
Emily, remember on your first show when we actually invited you to select a number between 1 and 26?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and we sort of channel the thoughts of the TUT. Yes, I know, we've got a magician in here. You've been selecting all sorts of... Yeah. It's like life is a series of selecting times and so on. Well, talking about time, as we just have been, Einstein and so on, and Annette Andre, it is time now to actually move to the orator of those notes from the universe, the fabulous, amazingly talented, inspirational guru who is Mike Dooley. Mike, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
Oh, happy, happy, Alex, and thanks for having me.
And what's the weather like in Florida? Have you managed to escape Stormzilla, or Snowzilla, effectively?
We very good. Yes, we did escape it, although we got our first brush with cold weather a few days ago, bringing us almost down to the freezing point, but today it is back up to a balmy 75 degrees Fahrenheit, which is quite nice, almost T-shirt and shorts weather.
Well, it is the back end of January, so clearly in Florida, that's how we go. Exactly. It's the positivity that always impresses me from that point of view. Tessa, as ever, you will have done your research. Have you signed up for a note from the universe as yet?
I haven't, but I have been on the website.
Oh, yes.
So,
and what would you like to ask Mike about?
Gosh.
Stunned. I'll tell you what, Mike, whilst Tessa's sorting through the system for that, because it'll all manifest in perfect time, as we've said, we'll introduce you to the team. We have, from 10th Planet Events, the amazing guru of magical... how would you define yourself, Derek, actually? I mean,
we do events, so we entertain people.
Events, entertainment.
I think if you've got... 2,000 people come to a show, or if you have 20, our job is to entertain them.
Like precisely. Theater, so. Whether it's 2,000 or whether it's 20, 10th Planet Events will coordinate for that for you.
Put a smile on your face. Please.
Much can be said for our magician. And yes, Mike, we have a magician in the studio, the fabulous magician from the East Midlands, David Fox.
Hello there, Mike. How are you doing?
Hello. Yes, yeah. Hey, David. I'm happy. How are you?
Very good, very good. Glad to hear the weather's so good in Florida. 75 degrees, you said, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, you could just feel jealous. Yeah.
Now, David, you know that we like the miserable wet rain that we get in Lincoln, England. It enables us to give some positivity by using the contrast that the universe provides for us to actually say, well, we know we don't want that, or we like that. And, you know, it's nice weather for ducks. Actually, it hasn't been raining too much.
It's tropical down here for me. Yeah.
And we also have, of course, Emma Tinson. Emma, have you spoken to Mike before?
I don't believe I have. I don't think so. Yeah.
Well, what I will say, Emma... As I frequently say to all my undergraduates, the more capable ones, of course, from that perspective, is take on board what Mike says. It'll guarantee top-quality results throughout your entire academic life and beyond. Oh, there we are. No pressure, Mike, but I know you can actually sort of work your way through that whole thing. I also have Tessa Snart from Peterborough and, of course, Emily Jones from Shropshire. So there we have it. Now, Tessa, have you thought...
Hello, everybody.
Exactly.
I've got a question, actually.
Go, Emily.
I had a bit of a look on your website, and I was wondering if there was any particular message from the universe that you were particularly proud of or that was your favourite.
I've written about 3,000...
Only 15 years. That's just a smidgen of time.
I have a lot of favourites. Okay, one that comes to mind... goes something like this. It's a question. It leads with a question. Do you know what happens in the jungles of time and space right before a really huge dream comes true? And, of course, the answer is, I don't know. So it continues. Absolutely nothing. So if, perchance, right now in your life, nothing is happening, consider it a sign. And of course, the way that plays into all of the messages and notes that I write is that, you know, our thoughts become things, but it takes some time. So hold on to your dreams, have these desired end results in mind, do something about it, but don't be looking over your shoulder constantly, you know, in self-doubt. Did I do it right? Is it working? Is there really a law of attraction? Because that kind of undoes the energy and diminishes the possibilities for a happy manifestation. So just because it seems like nothing is happening in one's life never means that nothing is happening in one's life.
Well, I think that's really good advice, definitely. It's good good food for thought.
And in terms of...
Thank you, Emily.
I mean, Mike, one of the things, I mean, clearly everyone has challenges in their own life, and that might be challenges brought on by bereavement. And I know, Mike, you also sort of lost your mum recently in the areas from that perspective.
Yes,
but
indeed.
In real senses of the word, it's so important to maintain that positive attitude that when you think that the world's against you, you know, maybe just... I mean, Derek, you must have had one or two sort of times in your life where you thought, what's going on with the whole system?
I think we've done shows, and at the shows, things are starting to go wrong, and you start to think, oh my god, you know. And one or two other things then go wrong, you need to just regain your thoughts, and be positive, and it does sort it out. It's just nip away at those odd little problems, and the rest go away.
And yet, Mike, sometimes we find that the most challenging thing of all. I mean, Emma, bless her heart, just fretting about the lack of time in her life, etc. And the more you fret, Emma, the less time you'll actually have.
I know.
It's true, and this all plays to not only is life in part, you know, how we choose to take the events, you know, is it all bad or is it building our character, but our thoughts literally have an energy and a life force all their own, which is now being proven in mainstream scientific laboratories. Our thoughts have an energy that as I teach and many others teach, literally will set you up for greatness or a fall depending on the nature of those thoughts. So if you're thinking constructive, positive thoughts, not only are you allowing space for you to feel better quicker by how you are taking what's going on in your life, but those thoughts literally have an energy that will rearrange the stage of your life, setting you up for so-called accidents and coincidences. There are no such thing as either. Leading to circumstances, manifestations, new friends and laughter that will mirror what you were thinking of, that positivity that you were putting out. So it is so much more than, you know, a way of looking at life or an option to be positive or not to be positive. We're literally creating our tomorrows through the choices of what to focus on today.
David,
woohoo!
Yeah, exactly. I was giving the woohoo mentor, and it was happening. David, as somebody who switched from teaching as a profession to becoming a magician,
very much very poignant what Mike's saying. Funnily enough, I'm reading Charlie Chaplin's biography at the moment, and what he actually says, and part of his biography, is almost echoes what Mike is saying. It's very inspiring, and I think it's important not to slip into a negative mindset, regardless of what you're doing. And it's always very inspiring to hear people say what you have said.
Well, and I think one of the happiest things, if I may say, one of the most serendipitous of things is, you know, we've heard it from Charlie Chaplin, you've heard it from me, it probably resonated internally with each of your listeners right now in the studio and beyond, and there are innumerable other teachers who have said this kind of thing, plus it echoes in the words that tell us that our positive thinking can make a difference. It echoes in the actions of all athletes who do creative visualization. Now, there's something to all of this, and there's a reason that every culture talks about it, and those who have achieved greatly or infamously will be able to point to thoughts that preceded their accomplishments. So I think it's great confirmation that it pops up in pop culture and classic culture alike, and it's a great reminder that, yes, it's true. It's not just wishful thinking.
Little plug for what I thought was one of the ace novels. Actually, it's not what it's a novel, a wonderful text from last year. The top 10 things dead people want to tell you. I know it sounds spooky. It's all right.
That
it
sounds isn't. Really creepy.
Yeah, exciting. Hello, I'm a dead person. I'd like you 10 to tell you things. Wonderful sort of novel, and now available, of course, in paperback. Mike, just share with us this whole thing, because clearly, you know, there are folk who say, oh, we've lost David Bowie, we've lost Lemmy and Motorhead, we've lost lots of stars, we've lost various other bits and pieces, etc. Yeah, I think it's important to realise that actually they're not lost, they're out there, they're in the cosmos, and also it's important that we continue with our existence here. Or is that just pre-seeing the text?
Well, no, you've got it spot on, and to edify, if it hasn't been done already, that is the title of my most recent book, The Top 10 Things Dead People Want to Tell You. It was once a note from the universe that said the same thing, and it had 10 bullet points. And I always thought that would be the coolest book as a title, and each bullet point would be a chapter. And Hay House, my publisher, then agreed, and so hence the book. But it is entirely a book about life. It's entirely about these underlying truths that not only give power to our thoughts, but kind of give us wings, that it explains in essence that we are all, if you will, God particles, eternal beings, every single one of us, that we existed prior to the illusions and we will exist after the illusions of time and space. And it's framed in a way, so logically, I'd like to think that, you know, that just as when any one of us takes a long trip and, you know, we get off of a 10 or 15 hour flight, the first thing we want to do is call home to loved ones and let them know, I made it, I'm here, it's awesome, I love you. And that's exactly what literally happens when anyone passes from the physical plane of this earth, if you're on board with all else that I teach and that is subordinated by the book, we are eternal. So if we are eternal, the first thing that happens, you know, in the after the after party of your life, because there is this celebration, there is the light, if you will, that near-death experiences report to us. But the first thing they want to do is like, oh my God, you know, Mike and Alex are back on Earth. Oh my God, they're probably devastated.
Mike, I went years ago. They said I haven't noticed yet. You know, I'm just hanging on in there. What the heck? Yes, Tessa, you were taught by a dead person. It's all right. I can reveal all that. Don't worry. It's okay. It's okay. And it is. Looking at the mission here, I mean, I'm just bringing in Dave once again. Mission to remind others of life's fundamental truths. Life is magical. I mean, does this echo? I mean, we've talked about obviously some of the ancient history of magic and how obviously shamans and folk have kind of gone through a whole heap of things from that perspective. Does that resonate again with your own existence?
I think it does. I think when you are positive, it's a curious path develops, and you will meet a lot of positive people along the way that actually want to help you. And the nice thing is you can hopefully reciprocate that. There's no doubt about it that one thing that's opened my eyes through being very fortunate to perform and do magic is just how many good people there are out there and how many people will try to support you with what you do, Mike. Yeah. Do you find that yourself?
A beautiful reminder. Yes, yes. And I think, you know, whether you're a magician or a plumber or a gardener or an author, when we pay attention, we see that goodness in everyone is awesome. And in that very book, I say that there are complete strangers, unknown to us our entire life, who would risk their life if they saw us dangling from a bridge and they thought it would make a difference if they tried to help. I mean, that's in the heart and souls of virtually every man and woman. It speaks to the love and the glory and the beauty of life in the jungles of time and space. You know, we're not here as, you know, to be tested, judged, and sentenced. We're not here as guinea pigs. We're not the product of solely evolution from amoebas. I mean, the deck is stacked in our favor, and our unending successes individually and cumulatively as a society just scream at us to see that there's magic everywhere on our behalf, no matter where we've been, no matter what we've done.
Emma.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say, Mike, I mean, I think it's amazing this way you have of looking at life and how beautiful life is and how a positive way of looking at things can make things so much better. I think it's something that everyone should do but doesn't necessarily think to do. You know, you can always have a bad day and come away from it and think, oh, you know, this went wrong and this went wrong. But, you know, it's great to look at what went right and what the positive outcomes of each day were, and, you know, think of everything in a really positive way. I think it's brilliant.
Thank you, and well said.
Sums it all up, really. That's why I said Emma is technically in charge of the programme. I'm just sort of going back to the grave.
This is why
I'm here. Tessa, any final thoughts for yourself?
Well, I feel really positive now.
You see? I'm going to go away and go on a 10-mile run. You have given me a lot of inspiration. We have done it, Mike. We've got the thing together. It's worked through that. And moving on to Phil Leonis in California. Phil, actually, one thing to say, Mike, which I did say I would actually share with you. Phil, sometimes, with those wonderful notes of the universe, and we have to do another batch, actually, because, I mean, we started off the 26th of them, actually, for the Myathon. And as you recall, Mike, we saved the world back in 2012 when we actually ran that 25-hour sort of package from that point of view. I think Phil Leonis actually did say sometimes he finds the PSs a little bit intrusive. Sometimes he finds the universe PSs. He finds that just a little, not quite right. So I think we might have to ease back with the PSs. I don't know why, but it's just he thought Moses just didn't quite like a PS. But anyway, it's just, he's doing his own thing anyway. It's what we call audience customer feedback, Mike. I know we live in a world of that basis, but I'm slipping momentarily away from. Let's go positive again. Let's focus on that. Derek, any final thoughts from yourself?
I just think that's fascinating. Thank you. It's great insight. Very interesting.
TUT.com is the go-to website. Emma, would you like to throw those last two questions over the ocean to the height of Florida now?
Yes, Mike. Did you have a reasonably good telephonic link with us today?
I had the best link ever with you guys today.
Positive. So in that case, would you like to join us again on the show anytime soon?
The sooner the better, and thank you for the offer.
Mike Dooley will return very soon. Excellent. Round of applause, Mike Dooley, please. Life continues in its own way. It's phenomenal. In fact, to such an extent that the computer even sort of went to a situation of thinking, what's going on with this? Let's take the Moody Blues.
Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions with Alex Levchuk and the Midweek Drivettes on Siren 107.3 FM, a 21st century radio programme with 23rd century philosophies.
Tinsel, allowing for the fact that when we look at the latest update, we see Phil Leonis has officially been welcomed into the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. Do you think he actually deserves to have a reveal, together with the listener, of his latest ident for the Midweek Drive?
Oh, yes. I think we should make a big, grand
A grand thing, of the thing which has been sort of worked on for at least 18 months in collaboration with the universe, without any PSs, and a whole heap of other things. This is the moment, then.
10:30 a.m. in L.A. can only mean it's time for the Midweek Drive team to welcome their top Californian cultural correspondent, Phil Leonis, back for another segment of Cultural Perspicacity.
You won't believe the number of times perspicacity was actually thrown up as a challenge to be said. We even had to change the voiceover artist. Welcome, Phil Leonis.
Is that David and Sean's younger brother, Perspicacity?
Oh, I see what you did
like
there.
What I did there?
Genius.
I made a David Cassidy reference before you could. Yep. Hey, I wish we could all build a time machine and go back in time before I made that pun. So,
What a fantastic show. And because the universe appeared before I appeared, I feel like it won't... the word that I used was I felt like the universe in its PSs is stalking me. Right? Because it gets so cuddly, it gets so touchy-feely. I don't want hugs from the universe, and I don't, you know, I just feel like it's spying on me a little bit. Anyway, what a fantastic, fantastic show. It's been so much to talk about, but I needed to share with you that while the ongoing conversation about time and our relationship to time and our perspective on time was playing here over the speakers in the house, our housekeeper was getting more and more loud in the other room, frustrated, shouting, literally, "What happened to my time? Why hasn't my time started? Where did my time go?" I thought that was fantastic, what you had manifested in the household here. You know, what Mike Dooley was talking about and what other great teachers have talked about, and the importance of positive thinking and the danger of negative thinking, you know, the tricky part about this, because it sounds great. I mean, who wouldn't want to say, right, yes, I embrace the positive thinking, because if nothing else, it doesn't necessarily make what happened go away, but it allows me to be able to create a new moment easier. Who would deny that? Most people would not. But the tricky part of it is that we then think that negative thinking itself is a bad thing. So we start to think about negative thinking in a negative way. We've just exacerbated the problem. It's from my experience, it's how impatient I was getting. I've been helping my family, taking them to medical appointments, and I found myself getting so impatient with one of my members of my family with their impatience. I was getting very impatient about their impatience. And we do that as human beings. We meet the thing with the thing, right? I get so angry with people who get so angry. I'm so sad about how sad I am. We do this. So when we start to slip into negative thinking, then we start to get down on ourselves about the negative thinking. Instead of embracing the trick, which is to realize that all of it, the good, the bad, the so-called ugly, all of it, especially when it comes to our thoughts, all of it has a place and all of it serves. And it's about not giving over our power to our thoughts, seeing our thoughts, experiencing our thoughts, putting them up on the bulletin board maybe for later and say, huh, that must serve in some way. We'll look at that later. But to recognize that we are not our thoughts, we are the ones thinking them, and we are the ones who have the responsibility to choose what we do with them.
As ever, Leonis and Dooley on the same show with the Midweek Driverts is like a phenomenal
in
all sorts of ways.
It's getting deep and emotional.
I have a couple book recommendations for you if you want to hear them about the time and about this.
Let's ask Emily, shall we? Because she hasn't had the joy of being asked specifically about a specific editorial thing. So, Emily, would you like to hear Phil Leonis's book recommendations?
I would indeed.
There you have it, Phil.
Two fantastic ones. First, in honor of Einstein, it's Alan Lightman's modern classic, Einstein's Dreams. And this explains both the general and the specific theories of relativity through dreams that Einstein had while he was a patent clerk. And it's just a poetic, inspiring, beautiful, beautiful book. I don't come away from it with more of an appreciation for science, but I do have a greater understanding of relativity. And it's a beautiful book, and they're these very short pieces, and they're wonderful to read aloud and share with people. And the other is a book that is called, let me see, I dialed this up, A Sideways Look at Time. And it is very much travels the world, both contemporary world and the past world, about how different cultures experienced time. Never mind how they measured it. It's about that as well, but how they experienced time. Because, you know, how we measure it and how we experience it is unique to our culture, to our geography, to our age. And we all think that there's some sort of constant of time. And we've been fed this idea that we can measure time. And we do indeed get more and more precise in our measurement of it, breaking it down into millions and billions and quadrillions of seconds. But, of course, we have to keep adjusting for the unpredictable way that the universe actually unfolds. The universe keeps getting time wrong, and we keep having to adjust for that, because there is no constant. It is indeed a thought construct. And this book is wonderful. It delves into not only how cultures experience and measure time differently, but how men and women experience time differently. And it's a great, very liberating, nourishing book, a sideways
and
look
indeed,
at time.
Next week, we'll be talking about the Native Americans with Randy Reinholtz and Jean Bruce Scott. Also, time enough at last.
Absolutely. And Alex, for you, of course, I just offer up the following quote. Timeline. This is no time to argue about time. We don't have the time. Name it, Alex. Name it. I've turned the table
on
you.
Oh, you have, haven't you? And it's so frustrating. I shall have to hold fire on that and admit, pleading the Fifth Amendment, that Derek, can you help me out with that little quote?
I haven't got a clue. I'm sorry.
No,
you know.
No, extraordinary. Slipped it in there just as
which
I was watching.
Which Star Trek movie, Alex? Which Star Trek movie is that from?
Star Trek movie? We don't have the time. Well, it must be Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, I suspect.
It's Star Trek First Contact, Deanna Troi.
Oh, you see, Next Generation's most classic original series. You're quite right. We don't have the time. And she's slightly inebriated, of course, when meeting up with the founder of Light, Faster Light Space Travel, Zefram Cochrane, played, of course, by the man who was in Babe. Anyway, never mind. City on the Edge of Forever. That was where my head was at, you see, thinking about that whole sort of sequence.
You had a better idea than us, Alex. I didn't have a clue.
We never shared that whole constant. Derek, you've never actually had filled in as at a 10th Planet event.
I haven't, no. I'm sure it's a big error on my part. We must talk.
Well, it is, actually. Because Phil is erudite, witty, whether it's a room of 20, 200, he can cope with all sorts of things. First came to into our sphere of connections via the Sci-Fi London Film Festival and Louis Savvy. But, you know, I just thought I'd just put that out there.
We'll anyway. Have a chat.
But, Derek, quick shameless plug for some of the events that 10th Planet are coordinating that maybe Phil might like to fly across the Atlantic for.
I'm sure he would. We've got Unit Day coming up, celebrating Unit in Doctor Who. They were in it for about 40 years.
He is Doctor Who, by the way. He has claimed to be Doctor Who in the past.
I have never claimed to be that. I have asked why, Derek, in the past, why I can't get into Doctor Who, why it does nothing for me, why I have, because it feels like, you know, from the description of it, this would be absolutely up my alley. And finally, people close to me said, well, it's because you are the Doctor. You hate looking in the mirror.
Nostalgia, it's...
It's the Cyber Legion. Yeah. It's the unit event. It's the 14th of May 2016, Day of the Cybermen. It's everything that you want to. It's celebrating 500 editions of Doctor Who magazine in conjunction with Big Finish and 10th Planet events on the 2nd of May. It's Dimensions 2016 on the 7th and 9th of October at the Copthorne Hotel, Newcastle. It's all of those kind of things.
TV and movie fest. We do all sorts.
Have you been interviewed by Emma Tenson as yet?
No.
And indeed, Phil, that also rests for your good self. But we'd like some more magic, I sense. Would you like some more? David, are you ready for
a little magic? Yeah, it'd be lovely to do a little bit of magic. It'd get Phil involved and really get everybody involved.
Because we had the other Phil involved earlier, of course.
We did, yes. Involved, and so. It's good to hear your voice again, Phil. How are you doing? You keeping well?
I've been doing great, and I'm intrigued as to how you'll incorporate me into the magic trick. Are you going to saw me in half?
Take that, well, your Pack Hollywood Hour and your expanded extended editions. We're bringing you magic on the Madrid Drive.
I have a pack of cards. It always starts with a pack of cards. Well, I have a pack of cards in my hand. Now, what I'm going to do is just ask people to name playing cards. It's as simple as that. So I'll ask some people. Well, let's start off with Emma. What card would you like, Emma? Just name a card.
Can I have the Three of Diamonds?
The Three of Diamonds. Oh, you're testing me here. Spot cards are rather tricky to find, I must say. Usually people will go for an ace, perhaps, or a picture card. Ah, is that the Three of Diamonds here, Emma?
How did you do that?
There we go. So we found the Three of Diamonds out of the deck. Now, let's ask, well, maybe I haven't actually asked Derek to help us with anything. Derek, what card would you like, sir? Any card at all?
Nine of Clubs.
The Nine of Clubs. Now, is the Nine of Clubs a lucky card for you, sir?
might be in a minute.
Maybe in a minute. Well, let's have a little riffle of the
Could
plat.
Still be yeah. a big night, of course, Derek, if...
On the top, can we see the Knight of Clubs there, guys? So Derek's card, the Knight of Clubs. Now, that is 2 out of 2. Sometimes in life, I think the best things come in threes, Phil. Now, what I'd like you to do is just imagine you have a pack of cards in your hand and just shuffle them up. Can you do that for me, sir? Just give them a little bit of a shuffle and spread the cards out hypothetically in front of you and take a card out of that pack. Have you got one?
Indeed.
You have one. Now, the Ace of Spades is a popular card.
Are you at?
Have you got the Ace of Spades in your hand?
It's the time.
My imaginary card in my imaginary card in my imaginary hand? No, it's not the Ace of Spades.
My God, what card is it? You can tell us. You can name your card.
Oh my goodness. It's the five with the clover leaf. What is the clover
leaf?
Five
of
with
clubs.
The clover leaf.
Now this is incredible.
The clubs.
The five of clubs. Now, before I left today, there's actually only 51 cards in this deck, Phil. Would you believe me if I told you that? There's one
I
card.
I would believe anything you told me.
Never believe a magician. Actually, I've got my wallet here, and maybe if I could just ask Emily to unzip the wallet. There's a zip in my wallet. Can you unzip that then, Emily?
No, take it. Not take any money while I'm doing
it. Well, being a Scotsman, I think the magic. Inside, there's actually a card. Could you just pull it out and tell everybody what card's inside my wallet there, Emily?
The five of clubs.
The five of clubs. I think a big round of applause to Phil there. That is incredible.
That's awesome. That
the
is awesome.
My wallet
and what I love is... And what I love is that everyone knows that there's no way that I could have been in on this because I couldn't even name what a club was. I had to describe the
image. Most people are like that.
Clover.
Shamrocks is fine. We don't. You mean or clovers? Yeah.
Everybody wants to play poker with me. Clearly,
well, it shows you're not a gambler. You're a good man. Yeah. That's what it shows.
Strange. I'd always seen Phil as being the 21st century maverick, but obviously I'm going to have to rephrase that whole sort of system now. But never mind. It's a thought. Phil, still time for you to actually go to any of the Midweek Drivettes or the team and raise whatever issues or comments you'd like to over the sequence of programmes.
I am fascinated by the idea of time machines. So much of literature is about this. We even are asking presidential candidates if you could be in a time machine, like we need to, since most of them already live in the 1950s. But I realize that for me, cinema, going to the big screen, going to the movies, that literally is a time machine. Buildings often now feel to me like a time machine. When I become aware of being in the place and the presence of, for example, Einstein, I went to see Charlie Chaplin's City Lights at the theater where it first played, and I sat in the seat where Albert Einstein watched it on the night of its premiere as the guest of Chaplin, and it was a time machine for me. And I'm wondering, for each of the guests, is there any kind of time machine for you, something that really brings you into a deep, either emotional or a visceral sense of the history that's come before you?
Derek?
I think I try and sort out a few problems or conspiracies. So go back to Lee Harvey Oswald and see what actually happened, things like that, because there's such good conspiracy theories. Mm. So I'd like to do that.
An investigative time travel.
Yeah, I think there's so many conspiracy theories. I think they're fascinating, and there's normally an
Will
answer.
Will you please give Derek a copy of my movie, Alex?
When Emma Tinson returns, of course. Sorry, Emma.
All right.
I know.
Okay.
Sorry.
How is it going, Emma? Have you managed to watch it in 4 years yet?
I actually haven't even started
well,
it yet.
Well, it's only really 2 years. Don't worry. It'll get there. Support them. The truth is out there. Worth catching. Absolutely superb. Another reason why Phil Leonis would be an ideal 10th planet.
Okay.
Well then, Emma, that my movie might be your time machine, because when you indeed do watch it, it will take you back in time 2 years to when you were given it.
Maybe.
Were you a first year when we first said
No, it was last year.
Was it last year? Okay.
I think when you actually gave it to me, it was like...
18 months ago.
No, it wasn't that long ago.
Don't worry, it'll all work out perfectly. David.
Well, it's interesting that Phil mentioned Charlie Chaplin there, because I did mention earlier on, I'm reading his biography at the moment. When it comes to time, I love history. The biography itself is very eloquently written, and it's almost Dickensian, the way that Chaplin describes his childhood. And I think it's lovely being able to read accounts from the past and actually almost walk into those accounts and try and take yourself back to other times. I enjoy doing that, but also think you learn a lot about history by doing that as well, Phil.
Well, you know, what you mentioned about the Dickensian tone of it,
yes.
There's, again, not to plug my movie, The Truth is Out There, an epic documentary of comedy, consciousness, and conspiracy, not to plug that, but there is a fantastic philosopher artist in the film who talks about that all artists and storytellers have a power if we think not in terms of time, but we think in terms of tone, that if we strike the right tone, then our message will indeed ambiate across the ages and will serve as a time machine, which is why when we read Plato today, we're still thrilled and we think that he's writing about us right here, right now, because he found that tone. So the idea of tone as a time travel device is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Every book, of course, is a time machine. I'm just delighted I managed to actually download the latest edition of Isaac Asimov's science fiction periodical to my new portable device. It's very good. And analog as well.
Alex, you do this all the every show. Blissfully, you do this. Music is, of course, a time machine. And in that regard, I'm trying to give you as much of an advance notice as possible. If you play me out today with The Outsiders' Time Won't Let Me, which was a theme song to my second feature film, that would be awesome. I wouldn't have any complaints about that.
That sounds to me like a hint. Meanwhile, let's move on to Emily.
Well, back where I'm from in Shropshire, there's a place that's...
Time stood still.
Yeah. Oh, don't.
You still see dinosaurs there.
There's a Victorian town, and you go through a set of stairs and through a dark corridor, then out some double doors, and you're in a full replica Victorian town with people dressed up. You can change all your money into the old-time stuff, and it really does feel like you've gone back in time to the Victorian era. I love it.
Or in the case of Shropshire, yesterday.
Pretty much, yeah.
This is year-round?
Yeah, you could, I mean, it's freezing because it's Britain, most of the time. Anyway, even in the summer. But it's great. We love it. I mean, we used to have a year-round ticket and go whenever we could.
Sounds like a location report to me, Phil.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm coming over, and let's do an audio postcard from the ancient past.
Are you up for that, Emma?
Yeah, I've actually been there before. I went on a school trip when I was really, really little. And I think I was very confused because I don't think our teachers fully explained that we weren't actually just going back in time. It was just, you know, a place. But
great.
It's really, really interesting. It's really well done. You know, everything is really archaic and it's fantastic.
Tessa.
I was going to say music. Music is definitely like my time machine, and everybody's, I think, that takes you back in time. And there's a lot of events that go on with like the 1940s that I know of, and everybody's very authentically dressed, and even like people...
Or in the case of Lincoln, yesterday.
Yeah, even like students our age and everything, so...
Which, as I have to reveal, that the only Outsiders track Mr. Computer has is Lost in My World. I don't know if that's going to suit him, so I'm going to have to put it back for a week. Emma.
Yeah, I was going to say as well as Tessa, like music is a big thing for me. I remember like when I was quite young, I was flicking through my dad's CD collection and I found the Best of the Kinks, and I'd never heard any Kinks songs before, and I put it on and absolutely loved it. And you know, from that age of being about 7 years old, I think I wanted to be a mod. And rock around. So, you know, it is really interesting on how music does affect you, and it does transport you back. And I think it's really, really like a wonderful thing that each generation can share, really.
And so we thank Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, Philip Hurdwood, Annette Andre, Mike Dooley, and Phil Leonis. And of course, in the studio, Derek Hamley, David Fox, Tessa Snart, Emma Tinson, and Emily Jones. Have you enjoyed the programme?
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
David.
Thank you for asking me on again. Lovely.
Emily.
Yeah, it's been great.
Tessa.
Really great.
Still working on the Leonard Snart connection. Good guy, Captain Cold. Mind you, Phil's more Marvel as opposed to DC, but we'll work on that. And Emma?
Yes, it's been fabulous as always.
And then the last two questions for Phil are?
Have you had a reasonably good telephonic link with us?
It was outstanding.
And will you join us again on the show anytime soon?
Why, did I sound like I was lying? Why are you laughing?
And the next little important announcement is on the 30th of January 2016, 10th Planet Events are signing and Q&A embarking, Derek.
It is indeed.
Embarking. Amazing. That's it. Okay, because Emma has the power, sadly the outsider is going to have to wait for a wee while, maybe 168 hours. But she gets Ray Davis and the others with that other sort of dwion of time scenarios, Waterloo Sunsets. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Dirty old river, that's tricky.